You're listening to WSLR 96.5, low-power FM in Sarasota, Florida. This is the Surreal News Show, and we're reporting underreported news items. In the studio, my co-host is Larry, and also we're very fortunate to have a new college student, the president of the ACLU of New College, Hannah Ackerman, who's also going to participate. Larry is going to read your bio.
Ben, welcome back to the Surreal News. Nice to have you here again.
It's good to be here.
Dr. Ben Tannenbaum is Program Director at the Center for Science, Technology, and Security Policy, which is part of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He holds a PhD in physics. He works on a variety of projects for the CSTSP, including drafting policy briefs, tracking legislation, serving as liaison with MacArthur-funded centers and the security policy community, organizing workshops and other meetings, attending congressional hearings, and providing testimony for Congress, among other things, a very busy man. Ben, this is really wonderful to have you on, particularly this week, with this global summit that President Barack Obama called to deal with the issue of nuclear materials. And I wonder if you could, first of all, just to fill us in, there's a treaty signed between the U.S. and Russia, I think, to kick that meeting off, and then the meeting proceeded from there.
That's right. Actually, there was one thing that happened before that. Last week, the United States released its nuclear posture review, the plan that the Obama administration spent almost a year crafting on how...
And go ahead and speak up.
On how it was going to use nuclear weapons to defend the United States. So that was released last Tuesday. On Thursday, the U.S. and Russia signed the Next Generation START Treaty. Some are calling it the Prague Treaty, some are calling it New START, and that will continue to reduce the number of nuclear weapons that the U.S. and Russia have. And then, as you said, on Monday and Tuesday of this week, we saw 47 countries come together in the United States here in Washington to talk about protecting fissile materials, the stuff that we use to actually make the nuclear weapons.
All right, so the big picture here for me is that the biggest threat in the world is loose nukes. And would you agree with that?
Well, there's two questions here. The first question is loose nuclear weapons. In other words, things that have already been made into nuclear weapons.
Right.
And that could escape and be stolen and be used by a terrorist organization. And the other one is the material that you can use. And there's a question as to how much of this stuff is actually out there and how well it's being protected. So that's why President Obama called together the 46 other countries this week to talk about how you better protect the fissile material.
All right, so I have a news item in front of me that that I'd like you to correct here. According to the news, Ukraine to get rid of highly enriched uranium and give it to the White House. This was reported into the news in the news this week. Where is that nuclear material actually going?
That's going to go to Russia. Now, as it happens, the reactors that the Ukraine has were originally designed and built by Russia, and they use Russian or originated highly enriched uranium. The United States is going to pay for that fuel to be transferred back to Russia, and so Russia will keep it.
Speaking of this material, this highly enriched uranium, there is a myth that I want you to bust, that this uranium is hard to get rid of, that it's going to stick around forever. Can you sort of bust that myth for us?
Well, I mean, if we just let it sit around, the uranium has a half-life that's measured in billions of years. That means if I have 10 pounds of uranium now and come back in a billion years, I'll still have 5 pounds of uranium. But I can, through some fancy chemistry, blend it down into what we call lower enriched uranium, and then I can use it as fuel in my nuclear reactor, and I can use it to generate electricity. In fact, about 10% of the electricity that the U.S. has right now that's generated by nuclear power comes from old nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and I heard that statistic. So our nuclear power plants, the fuel rods, and we can also sell them, we can actually make money off of them, actually come from some of the nuclear material that originally came from Russia, correct?
That's right. We're buying Russian-originated nuclear weapons to fuel our nuclear reactors.
All right, so we have just a limited amount of time. Larry, did you want to jump in here?
I wanted to go back to the summit and, Ben, ask you how you saw it proceeding and whether there were significant conclusions that came from it.
Well, this really builds on the efforts by the Obama administration and the Bush administration before it to really increase the number of countries that are thinking about nuclear weapons and the material that you use to build them as a problem. Originally, it was just the U.S. and the then Soviet Union that cared about arms control. Eventually, we saw a few other countries begin to care about it. During the Bush administration, we saw a few programs come online the Proliferation Security Initiative, which was designed to intercept material on the high seas, and the Global Initiative to Combat Terrorism, which was designed to bring in other countries as well. So we saw an increasing number of countries in the last administration. And now, with this administration, we've seen even more. This 47-country assembly was unprecedented, to see that many countries coming together and really making serious commitments to secure the fissile material that's out there. We saw financial contributions from Belgium, from the United Kingdom, from Norway, from Canada, and from other countries. We saw real commitments from countries that have nuclear materials to give them back to the countries they came from, so that we have fewer and fewer countries with nuclear materials.
And where will it lead to a greater unification of these countries in a response to North Korea and to Iran? Does it strengthen the United Nations or the U.S.'s position about nuclear development in those countries?
We're seeing actually two parallel efforts in that. First, as you say, we're having countries coming together and saying, you know what, we need to change the global norms, the global standards of behavior surrounding this stuff. And so that we're beginning to see more countries come together to think, yeah, we really do need to put sanctions on Iran, and we really do need to take North Korea seriously. You may have heard some rumors that the word sanctions were used by the Chinese. Now, I've seen conflicting press reports as to exactly what it was the Chinese said, but it does seem as though the Chinese are willing to discuss serious repercussions for the Iranians if they continue down this path. The other thing that we're seeing is an increasing awareness on the part of industry, the people who supply the nuclear fuel, the people who run the nuclear reactors, and the people who take the spent fuel away, that they have an important role to play as well. So in addition to the summit that we saw publicly on Monday and Tuesday with all the heads of state, there was a smaller, quieter summit that was held by industry, and they're really beginning to reflect on the important roles that they play in nonproliferation as well.
All right, I have to mention the P word here, Pakistan. Were they there?
No, they were not.
So what's up with them?
The Pakistanis, they live in a dangerous part of the world, they would say, so they need nuclear weapons. In particular, they would say they need them to defend against India. Now, the Indians would say that they need nuclear weapons to defend against the Pakistanis and the Chinese, being in between those two countries. But the problem with the Pakistanis, the real problem with the Pakistanis, is that they are refusing to commit to stop producing more nuclear material. So they've said, we might need to build new nuclear weapons, and so therefore we reserve the right to build more material, to keep enriching uranium to weapons level. And they've really put the kibosh on what had been a global effort to pass a treaty called the Fissile Material Cutoff Treaty that would ban the production of weapons-usable material.
So things get a little dicey here. We have Obama saying that sort of rogue states could have sanctions if they didn't sign on to the agreements. And now, where is Pakistan? Are they going to sign on to these agreements? You know, they mentioned Korea and Iran as being rogue states. Is Pakistan also a rogue state?
Well, that's a tough question. I think if we'd gone back some years, we might have considered them a rogue state. Now we consider Pakistan to be an ally. But as you say, they are really an outlier on this question of stopping the production of weapons-grade fissile material. And they've really been stopping things up. So there is some question. There's a group in Geneva called the Conference on Disarmament, and that's where a lot of these treaties are negotiated. And the Pakistanis have really gummed up the works there. And there's some mention of maybe taking out this treaty and negotiating it somewhere else so that you can overcome the Pakistani roadblock and then really put the focus on them as being the bad guys on this.
What is possible to be done? And sanctions have not really... They may have slowed down Iran and North Korea, but they really aren't changing the equation that much. It doesn't seem to me anyway. Maybe there are things going on that I'm just not aware of. But can the international community, even if allied together, do anything to short of military action to prevent Iran and North Korea from proceeding in their present course?
Well, to some degree, we have to let Iranian politics happen inside the country as they will. It's very hard to say what will happen in the next election and actually what's going to happen during the rest of Ahmadinejad's administration as to whether or not there will be continued pressure from him personally to pursue this program. And so he's not done a particularly good job of stewarding the economy in that country. And so the people of Iran are beginning to be frustrated with him about that. So there's that, you know, let's pay attention to what's going on to Iran internally. Meanwhile, we've seen European countries really back off on their trading with Iran in general, while China has been picking it up. So that's why this mere mention of Chinese openness to sanctions should make the Iranians pay attention, because they have pretty significant trade with China.
How about Korea? I'm sorry, finish up.
I was going to say, and so they need to listen to what the Chinese are talking about.
How about Korea?
Well, Korea is an entirely different situation. It's a much, much smaller country with a much, much smaller economy, and it doesn't have any oil. So you don't have the leverage that you have over the North Korean economy that you do over the Iranian economy. We could all agree to stop buying Iranian oil and stop selling Iran refined petroleum products, in other words, gasoline. With North Korea, it's a much, much harder thing to do. The other problem with North Korea is that China really doesn't want to see North Korea fail as a country. It doesn't want to see that country right on its border collapse. And so it's not willing to push too particularly hard to get the North Koreans to give up any of their weapons.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, and we really want to thank you. On your way out, if you have a website that you want that people know about or get involved with. And also, when I spoke to you on the phone, you said you wanted to have an optimistic view here, that you thought that this was a good accomplishment. So go ahead and wrap it up for us.
Sure, absolutely. This was a big accomplishment because we had more countries come together and make real commitments than we've seen on this in a long, long time. This is a pretty obscure issue if you think about it, and yet we managed to have 47 countries, which included almost 40 heads of state, coming to Washington to talk about this issue. That's a great job by President Obama to really draw attention to this whole issue of nuclear weapons and eventually of nuclear disarmament. Our website is cstsp.aaas.org, and I'd also call your attention to the one run by my friends and colleagues at the Fissile Material Working Group, or fmwg.org.
Very good. Our guest has been Dr. Ben Tannenbaum, Program Director at the Center for Science, Technology, and Security Policy, which is part of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Ben, as ever, excellent conversation, and thank you so much for filling us in.
Yes, keep an eye on Obama's plan to get rid of the nukes in the next 4 years. We need you to keep an eye on that for us.
My pleasure, and I will do.
Excellent.